Hello and welcome back. It's been a good week this week. I got a very nice review in The Guardian. It was podcast of the week, but that was last week. So unlucky, because you're listening to this the week after. So I don't know how it fares, honestly, this week. But last week it was podcast of the week. So hooray, hooray. And thanks to everybody who's rated and subscribed and, you know, tweeted and all of that. If you like it, it's just the most brilliant and helpful thing you can do. However repulsive it is for me to ask you to do it. This week we have Lucy Montgomery, the writer, comedian, extraordinarily funny person, who's appeared in things like The Mighty Boosh, The In Crowd, lots of Radio 4 stuff down the line on Radio 4, the spoof phone-in show that I've worked at Radio 4 for quite a long time. And when I was working there when it first came out, and people thought it was actually a real phone-in, which is just really brilliant. And contrary to popular belief, people at Radio 4 love nothing more than to wind up those sort of red pen stained brigadiers in Tunbridge Wells who complain about grammar and things like that. And they do, I mean, every day. But so it was wonderful. She also happens to have two children with her partner slash husband, Rhys Thomas. And so I thought she'd be a brilliant person to talk to. And when she came in to talk to me, I reminded her that we were actually working together when she, at the time she had her first baby.
Yes, you were my wet nurse.
Yes, I was your wet Yeah, at times
no,
were
that
hard.
Was a, yes, you've but, seen it.
Yeah, but because I didn't have kids, my memory really is is it Polly?
That's right. Yes. Well done. Well done.
In a Moses basket in the green room, and you kind of rushing back in and
with wooden breasts. Yeah. To do baby milk.
To baby feed.
Yeah, that was stupid.
So
the whole thing.
But then I was trying to remember this morning. So how old was she? When did you? Were you even rehearsing pregnant?
Yes, because you know what it's like in this job. There is no maternity pay. Mm-hmm. And also there's that nagging insecurity of, well, I should do this job. Yeah. And obviously I didn't have children before, so I thought, it's going to be okay. I wrote myself a character that was about a woman who was pissed and pregnant. It got no laughs, so that had to go. But obviously the pregnant belly stayed. Yes, 2 weeks after she was born, I did a terrible show called The Wall. No, it's a great
the
show.
One that
really shit show called The Wall on BBC Three. My husband was presenting it. It was meant to be Noel Fielding. Rhys doesn't mind me saying that. I was on board before him, can I just say, and he copied me.
Yes,
but he copied me. But there were.
It's a weird one, that show, because it was really horrifically shit. Mm. But everyone working on it was really good.
Yeah. So how can that?
So how did that happen?
What kind of?
I've worked with lots of those people since then. Like, I really like everyone who was
on
it.
All the producers are brilliant.
Yeah, really
the
nice
writers,
and great.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was really. It just didn't. There was some weird sort of thing that happened. I don't quite know what it was, but
but we would take her along. The worst moment was I was dressed as Osama bin Laden being winched up. She was crying in a basket way over the part of the studio. Alexa Chung very kindly, this shows what a nice person she is, tucked in my top so my baby belly wouldn't spill over, because no one wants that to be seen. And the baby was crying. More importantly, the baby was crying. And I was like, put the dummy in! Up on wires. And my friend put the dummy in. And it was a bit, I don't know what I was doing. I thought I could carry on. Looking back on it now, it was stupid. Yes, we needed the money, but if I wouldn't do that 2 weeks after. It was crazy.
But you didn't know, and I think people do that with their first because they don't know.
Yes.
And they think, I'll just have someone
I'll just
to help me look
bring her along like a handbag.
Yeah.
I mean, we took very good care of her. I remember. But yeah, I was very tired and I was thinking, why am I doing this? Sitting up in bed, breastfeeding, doing rewrites for some sketch that's some shit character, like, I'm going to do another character. Just really needy and annoying.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah.
And having to learn lines and stuff like that.
Yeah. Anyway.
But anyway, it was done.
You
were mentioned in by Margaret Caborn Smith.
Lovely, lovely.
Recently,
hello.
Hello, Margaret. Who said that she had a post-it note by her bed saying Bridget Christie and Lucy Montgomery to kind of remind her that it could be done. So you might think it was stupid, but you were a trailblazer.
Oh, thank you. Well, I feel honoured to be in such great company and by Margaret's bed. That's amazing. Well, yeah, because I remember thinking, thank you, Margaret. I remember thinking of Sharon Horgan, who was very successful and she had a child and her career took off, obviously, after she had her first daughter. And I remember thinking, yes, if she can do it, everyone can do it. Why not? She's been so successful. Also, Alice Lowe, you must get her on because
I know I want
with the baby
to. Yeah,
and the
yeah,
film.
Exactly.
She makes us all look like work shy.
Well, because her daughter is about the same age as my son. So we were kind of talking a bit around that time because we were sort of pregnant at the same time, having babies around the same time. I think she's like a month older than Zach or something. But yeah, I mean, it was like the work. I was like, which is probably.
Well, you didn't make a film.
Exactly.
The fuck?
I was like,
did you write a novel?
I remember meeting her for like coffee or something, and she was describing writing with her daughter sitting on her lap and just, you know, writing and I remember just thinking, oh, it's a whole new level. Like, I thought, I knew I had friends who were looking at what I was doing and thinking, wow, you're doing that
Superwoman.
Already.
Yeah,
you're going to do a voiceover. And I'm like, yeah, that's quite easy.
Yeah.
That's really easy. But writing a film script with your baby sitting on your lap,
that's very impressive.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, it's also amazing, by the way, to be looking after your kids. It's not
no,
like,
of course.
It's really amazing to be, you know.
No, don't. We're saying don't work yourselves into the ground.
Yeah. Don't panic. I think
enjoy yourselves. Yeah.
A lot of it is the feeling, and it's quite a freelance-y feeling, or if you've been working for yourself for a long time, is the fear that you will miss out on opportunities or be forgotten or miss the boat some way.
Yes.
And
with the first baby, you think, I'll be written off.
Yes.
I mean, now who gives a shit, but then I really cared.
Yeah.
Because also my mum, I remember her saying, she was a singer and she was really ambitious. And then she had my sister and it was like the minute the baby was born, her ambition evaporated. So I thought that was an automatic thing that came out with the placenta. And then...
Do you believe her? Do you think that...
Oh, yes, I think so. That for her was, I've got my family now.
Yeah.
I mean, she said she would move and like not in those days no one could find you, so if nobody had your phone number and you moved house, she kind of gradually shed the contacts.
So she wasn't reminded.
And found it difficult to go to do, she would do session singing as well, to go to do session singing and have to pick us up and it was even harder then.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
But she's got no regrets over that.
No,
I have to ask her, I don't think she does.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because I sometimes wonder whether, conversely, my mum was a working single mum. So in my head, I remember, you know, that's what I've always just thought is what mums do. So I think my brother once said to his wife the awful thing where he kind of looked at her, but she was saying she was not going to be working, you know, when the kids were small. And he just looked at her and went, where will you get your sense of self? Like,
whoa,
the worst, that horrible.
That's damning.
Yeah, really,
are they still together?
They are still together.
Oh, well.
They're fine. And she works now. And it's not that that's why they're still together.
Get a job.
Yeah.
Find yourself.
But yeah, exactly. Anyway, so that was a kind of, that was our perception of it. But then, interestingly, once I had kids, once I had babies, I sort of thought, oh, I quite like being with them.
Oh,
yeah. I quite like hanging out with them. I quite like them. And, you know, and actually, that is what my mum did, but I don't want to, you know, basically I want best of both worlds, but I do want to be with them a bit. I don't want to be working full time and not.
No, that's why
them.
This job can be awful and great at the
yes,
same time.
Exactly.
Because you can use your non-working times.
Yeah.
For the children, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello? Is it a microphone?
So you're working 2 weeks after Polly was born and writing and performing and this kind of crazy whirl of energy and productivity, if perhaps not the highest level you have achieved in your career. But would you, how has your creativity been affected by having kids?
You definitely make better use of time, as I'm sure lots of people have told you. I remember with both of them, if I could get them to, because I've got two now, so if I could get them to bed at a certain time, I could have, say, from 7 o'clock to midnight, I could do some, so I was doing a radio series, I could write that. I mean, it wouldn't always be that time, but I would feel really good. I'd be so desperate after all day of going, or doing all of that, which is wonderful. Yeah. But then you start to go, ah! And then I would do that in the evening.
Yeah.
Not every evening, but just when I felt... And I would be desperate to do it.
Yes.
And it would come out with no problem, you know, no problem at all. So there'd be no staring at a blank screen and all of that.
Daisy Haggard was on a couple of weeks ago and she said a similar thing.
Very funny, yeah.
And she was sort of saying that actually, weirdly, when you have sort of less time, you can be more focused. Whereas before you had kids, you'd kind of be kind of lying on the sofa going... Oh, well, the thing is, I do have to post this letter.
I've got to go to the gym.
Yeah, to the gym. Yeah, exactly. So actually, in a way, it can be more focusing.
Yeah, that's true. Now they're at school. I mean, the school day goes like that. And then you've got to shell out loads of money for after-school babysitters. It's just very, very expensive. Yeah. I've done jobs that where the babysitter's been paid more than me.
Yeah.
And many times, just to have more things on your CV and And to get away, because I think when you get away, you come back. I'm really horrible. I just wouldn't be very nice if I was just doing kid stuff all the time.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it makes me, if I'm stimulated, I'm then therefore a nicer person to them. Whereas if I'm I'd just be, I'm lazier. If I'm doing it all the time, I just sort of lie on the sofa and I'm watching TV.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, whereas if I know I've got this day with them and then the next day I'm working, then I'm like, oh no, I'll make something.
Yeah, you really get the arts and crafts out of that
exactly.
day. Exactly.
Yeah,
I want to be there tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Look what a great mum I am.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're both probably really in the top
2%. 0.01%.
Sorry, 0.1%. Yeah. So
my daughter does, the eldest one does say, you're the best mummy in the world. So there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Does your child say no?
Not yet, but he will.
Oh, he can't talk. Okay.
He hasn't met many other parents.
He'd probably put it in a crayon mark somewhere, and that's what it means.
Yeah, on the wall, yeah.
The younger one hates me.
No. Oh, really? Real problems, real fights.
Yeah.
So how has having kids sort of changed your relationship? How has your relationship evolved? It's probably been a while since you've...
Sex-wise, we're talking sex?
Sex. I want to know about your sex life.
Well, my friend said the best thing. He said having kids is like, how did he phrase it? Running a creche with your ex-partner.
Yeah.
We're at the worst points.
Yeah.
At the worst points. I think...
Sorry, if any just, I thought you were a partner, with your ex-partner. That's
yeah, like an ex, your ex-boyfriend. Yeah. You used to have all of that, but now you're just running a creche. There are points when it's like that and you really shout at each other. Obviously it makes you closer. I'm trying to think, because there's been 10 years of it. It's all such a big old blur.
Yeah,
I'm sorry to be so vague.
No, it's good, because the thing is, for me, it's quite raw still. Like, I can remember...
You can remember how it was before.
I get that Facebook thing where it goes, this time, 4 years ago, you were basically on
in
the
Paris,
beach.
In Paris, making love.
And now, what are you doing? And invariably, I look at what I'm doing and I think, oh, fuck.
Yes.
But, no, I don't. I don't, actually. That's not true.
Oh, no, listen, don't feel the guilt. Don't feel mommy guilt.
No, I sort of want to be... honest, funnily enough, my stepmother said to me the other day, my little sister is pregnant, and my stepmother listened to, I think, an episode, and she said, oh, I thought it was great. I won't be telling Liz to listen to it now. I was like, why not? And she said, well, she's...
It's a bit bleak.
He doesn't want any scare stories. And I thought, oh, I really didn't think that this was that
this
at all.
No.
But then I thought it's quite easy sometimes to slip into the thing of talking about how hard things are. And you'd sound a bit of a knob if you went, but,
yes.
It's just so wonderful.
I'm so blessed. Hashtag blessed.
I'm so blessed, DD
fuck
or whatever.
I mean, yes, we
stuff.
Are, of course.
Yeah, but, it's not interesting.
Yeah.
But yes, so all of that, yes, I don't wish I was on a beach, childless on a beach in Thailand. I'm quite glad I have kids.
Yeah.
I also quite enjoyed being on that beach in Thailand.
Yeah, because my kids went away for 2 days and then we were like, oh my God, we haven't been on our own much. And then it got to 10 o'clock. The first night I went to the cinema, I saw Halloween. I can't stand the violence. And a child was had his neck broken. So I was out of there like that. That's not my idea of fun. Yeah. Sorry to be a squeamish baby, but I am a baby.
Yeah.
And then the second night, it got to 10 o'clock. We hadn't gone out. We were both really tired. I went, we've got to go out. We've got to go out. So we went to a bar, got quite drunk. Because you have to, even if you don't want to, you have to force yourself out and go, we can go anywhere we want. Yeah. So, And we had sex once, so that was good. First night. Second night we didn't bother because we'd already done it.
The rest of this podcast I want to focus in detail on your sex life with Reese and what it was like before you had your first kid, before you had your second kid. No, and your jacket.
Well,
more in terms of, running a creche with your ex-partner is quite a good analogy.
I think because we both do similar things, he's very fair. It's never been one of those 1950s marriages, which some people are surprisingly stuck in.
Yeah.
I think it depends on your job. So we've always been 50-50, and we'll go, you have that day, I have this day. And obviously you want to pay for childcare as little as you can, also because you want to be there. So it's between that and ourselves, we work it out. I think I am hashtag blessed to have him in my life because he is really, really fair and does everything, the washing and all of that, and the cooking. We all do the same thing.
Yeah.
The stage you won't have reached yet, and the worst stage, is when you're sucked into the school thing with mothers you don't necessarily...
Yes.
I'm sorry that it's always... it seems to be always mothers, sadly.
Yeah.
And we were just living in America for 2 years, and the mothers there were fucking insane. One of them was a porn star called Sandy Dreams, and she was pregnant. And then, I mean, fair enough, you know, and she was pregnant with another porn star, French porn star, and... I only know because I Googled the name. You had a class list. I looked up her name. That's not her name on the list. And then her Instagram was her asshole. So one of her pictures was her asshole. And then after she had the baby, she didn't really speak much. She had quite a lot of plastic surgery. She was quite haunting looking, quite terrifying looking. And then she said, oh, I'm going to work. I said, what are you doing this afternoon? I'm going to work. And you just think, oh, God, how does that work?
Yeah.
How long after the birth? I mean, that's another podcast for you. How soon after the birth does a porn star go back to work? I think it was about 6 months she was back in the saddle. Anyway, and they would be insane. Those mothers would be insane anytime there was a holiday, texting. They feel like they have to be doing things with their kids all the time to an insane level. Yeah. And in London, people are a bit more laid back.
Yeah.
But I had fights with a mother because her kid... her kids was, to my mind, out of control.
Yeah.
And the little one was
very
violent.
Is this in LA or in
London? This is in London.
Right, okay.
The younger one was always bashing up Rosie, my youngest daughter, always finding a way. So to the point where she was only a toddler, so I would go for a wee in their house with her on my knee, because if I left her in a room, he would be... And then he scratched her and her mouth was bleeding and I went totally apeshit. You're a fucking... And she was going, you're mental! You're mental! Exactly, Mum. And I was going, your kid's out of control. Get out of the house. And I just went mad. I had to get out and before I went insane because there was a trickle of blood coming from the child's mouth.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I didn't behave very well. And after that, she was quite scared of me. But I just felt like it just all came out.
And presumably that had been brewing for a while. You'd been thinking, this kid is out of control.
That kid's out. He's bashing everything.
Yeah, right.
She didn't do anything about it.
Yeah. And how, so other than, because I would, it going back to LA, I think someone I know in LA shared something on Facebook. I think there's a lot of money being asked for like crazy things at school. Is that?
Oh, yeah, we don't have to part fund the schools. It was a state school, but Pharrell's kid went there. So they would ask for donations. But otherwise, they don't have an art teacher or they don't have a PE teacher. Coach Evan will not be available.
Yeah, if
So, you know, it's fair enough.
Yeah.
But the bad thing they do is they publish the names and how much people have spent. So, of course, Pharrell's at the top, as he should be.
Yeah.
The rest of us are down below. And then They have a pizza party for the classes that have donated. So if one kid in that class has not donated, say you don't have the money to donate, the rest of the class will be penalised. No pizza party for you. So the social pressures do it. We wouldn't do that in England, but there it's like, show me the money.
Show me the money, right.
Another thing I noticed was people would give their kids, what's it called? Melatonin, because you can get it there. So one mother, whose job was as a Amy Winehouse impersonator, as you do, she had three kids, 9, 7, and 5. And then they invited us around to dinner. Really lovely people, really, really lovely. But at the end, she gets out these little pills, and the kids are all jumping about, and she tries to give a little pill to my kids as well. And my kids are going, can we have a pill? Can we have a pill? I'm like, no, you can't have a pill. She's like, it's fine, it's melatonin, it's herbal. It's totally fine, I get it from Whole Foods. Like, no. And she then said, her and her husband, they do it. She goes, it's brilliant. They sleep like a light, out like a light. We can watch our favourite Netflix shows. She's been giving her kids melatonin every night.
No.
So they go to sleep. And then the next day, I thought, I Googled it. They don't know what it does to kids' brains. So it might be fine. It might not. But I would not take the risk.
Yeah.
I sent her the thing saying, you know, you don't know what effect it has on a kid's sleeping patterns. And do you really want... Anyway, she said, well, thank you for... I don't think she really appreciated it, but... I just thought
that's nuts.
The natural
isn't it?
Sleep patterns. You're giving a kid at 5 the melatonin just so you can watch something on Netflix.
Yeah, it's not because you're doing it so that you can save a family in a burning building next door.
No.
Like, you're doing it so you can watch.
Or a lot of autistic kids will have Sabrina, melatonin, the because their sleep patterns are disrupted. Yeah, so that's in cases where medically you have to do it.
Yeah.
Or not just because of.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the difference where. Yeah, the money thing is an issue, and it's just we're more socialist here. Long may that last in terms of the money with the schools.
That is the first time I've heard that in a long time. The idea that
notice it when you come from there, yeah.
And you came back from LA to Brexit Britain, and your takeaway is we're more socialist here.
Oh, yes.
Wow. That says a lot about LA, doesn't it?
Well, really? It's Trump's America, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
My youngest daughter had a party, and then one of her friends... in the class, they had a bit of a tiff. She didn't want to invite her. So the party went ahead. It was like 4 kids. They had a sleepover.
Yeah.
And then the day after the party, I had a text from the mother. Tell your child to be more mindful, to not speak about their birthday. You didn't invite my daughter. I don't know how much space you've got in your house. Obviously, that's none of my business. Yeah, too right. None of my business. But she must be more mindful of other people's feelings.
Right.
This is a... 7-year-olds, yeah, 7, 8-year-old. Yeah, they're not allowed to talk about their birthdays. So I texted back going, not everybody's invited to parties in life. Tell your daughter to be more... She should be more mindful of that fact. I thought, you stupid... And then I said, never text me again. And then she texted back going, are you a child? Why can't I text you again? Just leave me alone. I don't want to be your friend. They just like...
Yeah,
and you cannot say...
Yeah, yeah.
They're not used to hearing no for their kid. They will not hear no for their child. So one other mother... If she found out there was a party and her kid was not invited, she would text everybody. Just checking, slightly passive-aggressive, just checking I'm not being a bad mom. Have I missed anything? Was there something in the calendar? No, your child wasn't invited. Then texting again. Is there anything going on today that my child could be at? Because obviously their kid goes, Mommy, I want to be at the party. And they go, I'm going to sort it out. Sorry about the bad American accents. Yeah. I do love America. I don't hate Americans.
Well, it's,
but
it, I think these... it's kind of what they're great and what they're awful at, which is what I love about Americans and America is that it's the opposite of us in terms of like everything's possible. So
Skipper.
Using that improv kind of language, they yes and you. You say, oh, I'm doing this, and they go, really? That sounds great. And then they add something
about
to
themselves.
Yeah. So they add something to what you've just said. So actually, I feel like I'm a kind of much better, more interesting, funny, wonderful person in America than I do here, where someone goes, oh, really? Oh, dead end, or that's nice. Or, you know, like, there's often a bit of sort of snidiness here or negativity.
Yeah, but,
or,
when it's all the...
But then the flip...
Slightly Stepford Wives.
But, yeah, then the flip is that the sort of thing all the time to say, we're so amazing and it's all good. And so they feel
so threatened. And your child can have anything.
By anything, like a kid not being invited to a party or, you know, like, you not having a good Christmas. You know, like, whereas here
but
we
I
go.
But I think it's their kid. Their kid is so important.
Yeah.
Oh, the worst thing was there were, just before we left, there were student council elections. So they have like a mini campaign there. So you'll create your own posters. You will do a speech to the whole school. So my daughter wanted to stand as, they have this thing called Way of Council. It's like to be head of student council, where they talk about their feelings. It's in a particular school. There's a council and then that one. And they, so they do a proper election. The teachers, it's all democratic. The teachers vote and everything. The first year she didn't get it. This year she got elected. Sadly, we left, she couldn't do it, but she got elected. It's a big thing. And the principal calls you in the middle of the, like really late at night going, she's got the job kind of thing.
Yeah.
Almost immediately there were texts from the mother of this mother I never heard of, like going, I heard you're leaving. What's going on? I don't, like, what? Who are you? She was the mother of another child who'd stood for election and had been beaten. And she started to talk to the principal behind their back, didn't agree, demanded a vote count. This is for a 10-year-old child. Demanded a vote count, and then resigned from the PTA in protest because he said, I'm not doing another vote count. She's won fair and square. We don't know if they're leaving America yet. Just leave it be, right?
Yeah.
So my point is that they will... Their child is so important. It's sharp elbows. Everybody else out the fucking way.
Yeah.
My child is the way, is the one. And you, and while it might be hidden a bit more in the UK, I don't think we come from that standpoint.
No.
That's why you can be hugely successful in America, obviously. Yeah. But if you're not, that feeling of, oh my God, I didn't, that's why it's more crushing. Because there's no middle ground.
That's true, yeah. But
and that's why.
Yeah, but also I think that those kind of parents, and there are parents like that in this country.
Absolutely, of course, yeah.
With similar age kids to you, she, you know, tells stories about, like, I think her daughter's on the swimming team, swimming squad, and there are other parents who will go, my daughter hasn't swum, you know what I mean? Like, hasn't done, you know, this term, so then my friend's daughter doesn't swim 1 week because there's...
Yeah, so like, of course she, it's
you know,
here,
your daughter's not good enough. Like,
This is fair
a lesson
square.
To be taught in the safety of your family and your school... So that you learn it for later life. Otherwise, your children become like Donald Trump.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. Yeah. So you need to teach them how to lose.
He had a very distant mother, apparently.
Well, there you go.
And a bullying father, didn't he? So it all goes back to
there
them.
There you go.
And another kid, well, there would be the very nice mothers who were like, let their kids be turned into monsters. He had a stick, and in front of his mother, he poked me in the boob with a stick and went, it's your boob! And he was 8, and I was like... You know, you just feel humiliated. You go, feel humiliated in front of everybody.
By an 8-year-old,
and then I sent a text going, that is not acceptable. I'm evil. I like my evil texts. It's not acceptable.
Yeah, wow.
And then the father made him come round and apologise, and he was crying. And the father did some clumsy speech about, in this day and age, you know, the way things are going, men need to be good to women. Like this. It was so awkward. Obviously,
what?
I
like
let him
now
off.
They do. But now, before,
I mean, these
that
days,
was totally, these days,
days,
that's not acceptable.
We really need to be not poking mothers in the boob with a stick.
Stop talking! I'm gonna get cross with you.
I was pushing along one child, the first child, in a buggy, just walking along the street, and a man in a white van just shouted out, "You fucking slag!" Why? A mother with a baby. What have I done?
Now, that can't happen every day, though.
That's why it stuck in my mind. I wish I had a shitty nap to lob through the open window.
I wonder what.
I mean, how much hatred do you have to have?
Yeah.
I wasn't dressed in a tarty way. I know,
and
I'm not victim blaming here.
Because when you have a baby, you're generally
not sexy
quite
anymore.
Sort of, you're totally not sexy. But also, you've kind of entered a state. I remember when you're pregnant and when you have a small baby, you get a little bit entitled. I think I did anyway. Whereas I'm like, I shall have your seat on the tube, and and you shall open the door for me because I am special, and I have this baby, and you know, it's like I'm this kind of holy person that you must help through, guide through life, and then slowly that kind of goes, and you think, I'm just actually.
You definitely appreciate how difficult it is for wheelchair users.
Oh yeah,
which I hadn't fully appreciated before. Shame on me, because I'm like, I can't get my pram up. Oh yes, but imagine if you always had the wheels.
So I had
you love the stations that have wheelchair access,
but also it totally changes your, so you can only go to places, so like
you would pick your route that way.
So you know, I'd get out at Green Park and then walk to wherever I'm going, because I can't, because I'm not going to rely.
You're not
going
to go,
upstairs.
Exactly. And going,
for help.
Sweating. I spent years just sweating, starving, hungry and sweating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really true. Yeah, I was once on a bus and this, and I was pregnant with Sadie, and holding, so there wasn't any room on the bus, so I had to fold the buggy. So Zach was, like, say, 10 months old, and quite a chunky 10 month older. And I was heavily pregnant, and I had to fold the buggy up because there wasn't any room. Not that the person who, anyway, whatever.
No one helped you?
No. So I fold the buggy up. I'm holding the 10-month-old who can't walk or anything anyway. And I'm really heavily pregnant. And then there's a guy sitting in one of the priority seats. As a Londoner, I feel like, this is my right. Yeah. I have all my life.
You are less able to stand.
Yeah, I have completely... And in fact, I've enjoyed it because it's like, it's my turn now. Yeah. So I kind of very happily, and in fact, almost preferred to ask someone to move than them just volunteer. No, I didn't prefer it. But like I had no qualms about doing it at all. So I said to this guy who was sitting at the priority seat, completely able to stand, clearly fine. And I said, can I have your... can I sit there? And he said, and he looked down at his feet. He said, but I've got these bags. And it was really funny, like every, and of course it was the time of day where it's basically mostly women on the bus anyway. And he, what was it?
Was it a Handmaid's Tale situation? Did you rip him to shreds?
Yeah, I did, because I just found it funny. I think we laughed and I said, like, and a few people laughed and I said something like, he said, oh, I've got these bags. And I said, well, I've got this, and pointed to my son, and this, and pointed to my massive pregnant stomach. And so I said, can you give me your seat? So he kind of went, oh, and stood up and gave me his seat. And I sat down, and it was funny. Like there were like at least about four or five women like smiling at like how ridiculous
what
it was.
A prick.
And one of the women went, unbelievable. And he went, yeah, I know. To which the whole bus was like,
no!
Oh my God, you're insane!
You're awful!
Yeah.
You horrible man.
But that pierced through the kind of holiness, you know, because you think usually people are treating me like I'm a queen. Like I'm a queen. I'm a holy queen.
I'm the queen.
And then you're like, oh no. And then there's the odd person who goes, no.
No, not I've doing it.
I've got a few plastic bags. I can't hold those in my hat, in my little hand. Yeah, it's quite funny.
Well, my friend had the opposite where she wasn't pregnant. She was offered a seat.
Oh.
She said,
yeah,
that's she didn't good. Say, it's just my shape.
Yeah.
She was fine about it. Yeah. She laughed.
I sort of hope for it now because I haven't really lost my tummy. And so I kind of stand there sometimes sticking it out going, do you know what? I wouldn't care. And I want your seat.
Give me the seat. Talking of travelling, the worst thing you've reminded me, when you flying with a baby and then I had express breast milk and they made me taste it at the...
Oh my God.
So I was like, it's breast milk. He's had a slight smirk on his face. And I was like, he goes, sorry, it's liquid. You can't take it on. But the baby needs the milk. I can't. He went, I'm really sorry. You're going to have to. So I pretend. I just went on that. But I didn't open my mouth and drink it. I'm sure it would have tasted fine.
Who asked? That's just a
security reasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Drink your own milk. You're not getting on the plane.
So going back to the creativity thing, how has your work changed? Since those days on the wall? Like how have you kind of so you write at night?
Well, not anymore. I mean, sometimes that's now a habit that is quite useful sometimes.
Yeah.
Now it's such a hodgepodge. It's just crazy. Obviously you have the 6 hours there at school where you have to pay for their childcare. And then unless one of us is earning money, one of us will always be there to pick them up.
Yeah.
I mean, when we get richer, They'll have round the clock nanny
staff. Yeah,
I mean we've been there enough now. It's been 10 and 8 years. I think they know our faces.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah,
I still feel that desperation to get. I mean things are slow, aren't they, in this industry?
Yeah,
desperation to get things going. I still feel that the desperate drive. That sounds really awful, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Also because it's the kind of job where you can carry on till you're 90 if you've still got your marbles.
Yeah.
So why not?
And your
not?
Figure.
Well, that went, yeah. If you like.
I made a long car. I made a long car.
Does anything drive you differently now you've had kids in terms of your career? You know, like, you know, at the beginning, it's kind of like, oh, Polly, at the beginning, you're doing it because it's fun and you want to be creating and doing stuff. And then once you've had... There are some knobs next door doing a photo shoot.
It was Paul Nichols. Nichols from EastEnders?
Was it?
Either that or a very thin version of him.
Paul Nichols just featured. I'm going to advertise this episode as being the with Paul Lucy Nichols Montgomery special. And Paul Nichols.
Did you hear him say sorry?
Yeah. It did. I hope it came off in the microphone. Sorry, I'm going to boost the levels of that. Yeah. Sorry, that was Paul Nichols.
Not Paul Nicholas, Paul Nichols.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought you said initially. I would have been more excited about. There you go. I was just wondering whether that motivation or that drive comes from an additional place or a different place or just the same place.
I think definitely the last 10 years, I would have, if I hadn't had kids, I think my career would have, I'd have had more career. Definitely, because there were jobs I couldn't do because I was pregnant.
Yeah.
I did a play called Jerusalem at the Royal Court, and then that went to West End. Couldn't do that because I got pregnant during the run.
Yeah.
And not blaming the child, that's fine. And then various other jobs that came about. And I think, or maybe it's just, I don't know whether I can blame my kids for this or if it's just that age of getting 30 to 40, or whatever it was, 32 to 42, was really fucking hard and things just didn't take off, and I don't know whether, as I say, that I can put that on my children's door. Obviously I'm joking, but that has coincided with having children. So, or whether it's all these kind of, you know, you read the surveys saying, oh, the percentage of, say, dramas written by women are in the last 10 years are 0.2%. So it's a wider thing that has coincided with having children and realizing that everything, it's a lot of things have been hard to get off the ground. I know it's the same for everybody. I'm just trying to blame the surveys and the kids.
The surveys' fault.
So, is that a bad thing to say?
No, it's interesting, isn't it? Because
then my husband would probably say the same thing. He would probably say the last 10 years has been tougher. You know, when you go, you feel like you're on an upward trajectory and then it plateaus or dips.
That's the thing. So at the beginning, in a way, I mean, I guess you've got that initial, that sort of creative drive and kind of adrenaline of being younger and
you just get a bit tired, don't you?
Maybe there's
in terms
sort of
like
thing,
live
yeah.
stuff, the thought of doing that now, I really try and make myself occasionally do it. I go, oh, so hard, I'm so tired, I've got to pay for a babysitter. Yeah. That definitely, if you were just on your own, you would be like, oh, it's fine.
Totally. And fun, so, like it was fun socially.
Yeah.
Like it was like you'd see all your mates, you were
that's
doing
true.
It with all your, you know,
you didn't
so
even
like,
think about where it was think, taking you
no,
that much.
No,
you're just
no.
like, oh, this is good.
Yeah, this is good for now. And there's a purity in that that's really great. But then as you get, Fergus was talking about that a couple of weeks ago where he was sort of saying, he was like, I'm not going to do those live nights anymore. So I feel like if I'm going to do it, it needs to be for a reason, it needs to be doing something for something.
Yeah, because you're taking time away from family life. And, that's true.
But equally, it's,
I'm ready for my second phase.
It's
definitely happening this week.
You were talking about dramas and stuff. Is that something that you'd sort of go into? Like, have you been writing?
Yes, I've written a pilot. I have written a pilot. So who knows?
Yeah.
I just keep reading all the things about they need more female. I mean, every time I'm so excited when there's obviously brilliant Killing Eve and all these amazing shows. Yes, finally.
Yeah.
Women on screen behind the camera. Yeah. I'm really hoping that will carry on.
Yes, exactly.
As a trend.
And to start moving away from just being, sort of initially they were all sort of things about parenthood or about being very women, like female
a women's
topic.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Where it's like actually something like Killing Eve, for instance, is just a story that happens to feature women kind of thing.
Yes, an exciting, thrilling story with very funny dialogue. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
That was interesting, but why don't we talk about something else now?
Okay, so we're talking about mums who do the old drugs. They're kind of like, I've always seen it as proving that they're still kind of cool and kind of fun. And
I'm still the same person
and
I was.
I'm still the same person.
I can still take Coke.
Yeah.
It's
but
fine.
It's so desperate, I think.
Yes, and ugly and horrible.
Yeah. You know, people who would sort of come down from the sleeping baby, go to parties, leave their sleeping baby up in a room, and then come down and do some Charlie.
A bit.
And then, yeah. And I remember way before having kids, looking at these people thinking, what are you doing?
I know one mum who went to her kids, she's got three kids, her husband, they were at home. She went to, I think it's okay to say this, if I don't say how it is.
Yeah.
She went to meet a dealer in a car. It was a very, very sexy man. She got in the car. Very sexy dealer. Whatever happened, she was buying some Coke. I don't know why I'm whispering at that point. And then
you're whispering in front of a microphone.
She found herself in a police chase. A police car went by. She was like, shit, my kids are at home. I'm buying drugs with a sexy man. And then I'm in a police chase. And they lost. Oh, luckily, they lost the car. They lost the police car. Can you imagine if it's like, oh, she turns back up at home in a police car. The kids are like, yeah, I just popped out for some milk.
And it's not because you're a heroin addict. It's because
you just
you're
want
just
something
bored
for a party at the weekend.
And you want to feel cool, basically. Like, it's really, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I did a lot of drugs in my youth. I know. But just now it's just like, but the reality of that.
Yeah.
The reality of having to wake up early and look after kids for a whole day the next day. What are you thinking?
I've seen some mums in a party doing it off the spice rack. Coke off the spice rack. That was a good moment. It is that desperate. I want to have fun because I started like 10 years ago drinking more at home.
Yeah.
I'm trying to calm that down now.
Yeah.
Because you can't go out so much. So you definitely get pissed at home.
Yeah.
All the time, which you wouldn't before because you were... Not so much. Definitely not. You go out. Why would you sit at home drinking?
Yeah, exactly.
Sad.
Yeah.
But definitely a lot of that.
Yeah. In terms of, you know, when you said that you would sort of, you needed to have that, you know, 7 till midnight bit of writing at the end of the day if you've been looking after kids.
Yeah.
Did you find, because I think in my case, that time was my priority. So I didn't really build many friendships or relationships with other mums. Because if I had...
No, you wanted that for you.
Yeah.
Yes, and I also never wanted to go in a pram to meet other mums to talk about their babies. I'm sorry to say, because they would just talk about their babies' sleeping patterns. It was so boring. I thought, if the baby's asleep, I don't want to be doing anything babyish. I'll go anywhere, anything but that. Or I'd just rather sit on my own, thanks very much. Or have a nap.
I want a break from it.
Yeah.
And the brilliant thing, I guess, about doing the kind of thing that we do is that you have, you know, lots of people around during the day.
So you can meet the non-baby ones who
don't necessarily have kids, and you can have a conversation with about what's going on, what are they doing, what was that like, you know, that's what you want to know. You don't want to know about
Other stuff.
It's kind of why I started this thing, actually, because I, even though it is obviously all about kids, but
but it's not about sleep
patterns, but it's not about that. That's
the most boring thing.
Yeah, and that was the thing
you
I was
in cafes.
Interested in. The thing I did want to talk about, and I still do because I'm quite in the thick of it right now, but it's that thing of how did you negotiate?
How old is your youngest?
She is, it's really funny, with the eldest, I was like, he is 23 and a half months. She is, I think, 19 months. She'll be 2 in March, beginning of March. Yeah. So we're just coming out of the kind of horrific.
Oh, but that size is so cute. And the clothes you can get.
Yeah.
I do miss that.
Yeah.
Oh, I can still buy cute clothes, but when you see the...
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Dressing her, I have to say.
Juicy toddlers.
I was, with Zach, I was very much like gender neutral, you know, let's not go all, you know, boysy kind of.
And
boys' clothes are really kind of.
Oh, they're awful, aren't
they're
just
boring.
And
they're
the very
colours,
boring.
They're all kind of.
Brown, green,
dark.
Blue.
Yeah. And the girls' clothes are just more jolly. And so I'd always sort of try and get him sort of colourful clothes and stuff. And then, of course, when she was born, I was like, yeah, that's going out the window. I'm totally girling. She's like pink all the way.
Oh, yeah, because you couldn't do it the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough.
Exactly. Yeah. So something else I often ask people is, can you remember the worst piece of advice you were ever given in terms of...
The worst things that anyone ever said to me was a relative of my husband's when Polly was she was, I don't know, a few weeks old. I was cradling her. It was a nice moment. she's leant over and said, you do realise if you died now, she would not remember you. She wouldn't know anything about you. What? Bleak thing to say. Thanks for that. In terms of advice, I can't think of any advice.
Yeah, it's probably terrible. Not. You're probably quite far away from the advice years, as it were.
Now we're in the internet years, which is more worrying. They're like Google, what are they looking at when things come up? Dodgy things, you just feel like in a second all their innocence and loveliness could be taken away when they just wanted to watch somebody opening sweeties on YouTube.
Yes, yeah. Is there anything that you have, do you take that into consideration with stuff that you might do work-wise in terms of, I mean, obviously Sandy Dreams might not have worried about that too much, but like, would you have sort of thought, oh, I won't do that because of my kids, or is there anything you wouldn't
there's
do?
There's been nothing so far. I mean, I've been doing a lot of kids' cartoons, actually.
Oh, right.
Hey Dougie.
Oh, really?
What else? What are they called? Digby Dragon. But my kids are now beyond that. So I've been doing a lot of those. But that's just... No jobs have come up. Oh, no, hang on. Last year, I did a sex scene, which I don't have much call... I'm not called to do much. And I did think... Should I balance it with, oh, well, I'm 43. That's nice to be asked. Or this is not really what I should be doing. It wasn't full nude, but it was, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, what am I going to tell the kids? They're not going to see it, but what am I going to tell the kids? And I had kind of said, I think they overheard me talking about it. And then I said, oh, yes, I've got to kiss a man, although I didn't actually have to kiss him, which I think would have been worse. I don't know why.
Yes, I agree.
It's too intimate and weird. Blah. Anyway, and then I just said, oh, I've got to kiss a man. And they went, oh, that's disgusting. Oh. So that was how I got around that. I mean, they will never see it, and so that's fine. And, well, they're not going to hunt it out. So it's
no,
fine.
They're certainly not. But, yeah, it's funny. I hadn't thought of that.
But then in terms of the wider thing, like why was that necessary to even have it in? It wasn't quite a funny one. It was a funny one.
Right, that's all right then.
But I do feel like maybe it was, oh, I don't know.
I think it's funny because I think we can't imagine what it's going to be like when our kids are adults, because we live in a world, even now, we live in a world where most of our past and childhood, and certainly our parents' past, is ungettable. Like, we have photo albums and that's it. We don't have like reams of pages of social media or photos or...
No, true. They're going to be able to track.
They're going to be able to like track
their kids will certainly be able to track them.
Yeah, I wonder how, because I think in a way we're so conscious about what we do and what we put out there. And I think in a weird way, by the time our kids are adults, they just won't be interested in that information because there's so much of it.
Yeah,
whereas we cherish those few photos we have and think, oh, our children are going to see that photo in 20 years time. And they're not, because they're going to have so many.
We make little books for them every year, so that's
we do that too.
They're good, so then they love looking at those.
Yeah
they absolutely love it. And I think then they can see how much we have loved them over the years.
Yes, exactly. So I've asked you what the worst bit of advice you've had. What's the best bit of advice you've had, or what bit of advice would you pass on to someone who is pregnant, just about to have kids?
When they're really small, and even when they're like 1, 2, you're so worried about, am I giving them the best thing? Like, you know, when you buy those black and white things when they're first born, and you're so worried about, will they progress at the right stage? And are they reading enough things? And now that they're, one's 10 and one's 8, I think you don't need... I remember getting piano lessons for my eldest one. She was like 5. It was ridiculous.
Try
it out. Yeah. We did one and now she's learning, but it's fine.
Yeah.
But it took a few years. But don't stress over those, he or she needs to have reached these goals by a certain stage, because it will be fine.
Yeah.
I know that's a very vague thing to say, but I would like to look back and just not worry about whether they're getting the right stimuli. Because if you're thinking that, you'll have probably covered it anyway.
Yeah.
And then, don't stress about their school thing. Just let them have as much fun as possible. Because now my oldest daughter will be going to secondary school next year, and they start talking about how much homework they get and all of that. And you think, oh my God, she's only 10 now.
Yeah.
Just let them enjoy themselves and Yeah, don't put any pressure on them at all. Good luck.
Thank you so much to the fantastic Lucy Montgomery. What a dream it was to talk to her. We mentioned, or she mentioned, Alice Lowe would be a wonderful guest to have on, and she is in fact coming in the new year, so I'm going to talk to her then, which will be brilliant. Alice has basically been in every single comedy in the last 15, let's say five, just to be kind. But no, it's longer, because she's incredibly brilliant and experienced, basically been in everything. She's in Garth Marenghi, and then she's done those things. She was most recently in Hang Ups. Made me laugh out loud. She's a very, very funny person. And she also wrote and starred in Sightseers. What was her thing, sort of horror film that was on a few years ago. As I mentioned in the podcast, her daughter is almost exactly the same age as my eldest, Zach, and she's achieved perhaps marginally more than me in that time since we've had our babies. So a hair's breadth, but because that's what it's all about, isn't it? Competition. It's a running thread in these podcasts, though, isn't it? So, yes, thank you very much to Lucy. Next week, we will be talking to improviser, writer, actor, and very successful podcast host, Carrie Ad Lloyd. I spilled my guts on Griefcast a couple of months ago, and she came to return the favour the other week. And we had a very nice chat about lots of things, including death, anxiety about death when you've lost someone before you have your baby. It sounds very dark, but I found it incredibly interesting, and I really hope it might help people who might. So tune in if that in any way applies to you or someone you might know. So yes, that is it. That is the end. I have to wrap this up because my daughter is about to return from Fruity Tunes, which is a class and where she sings and dances. And it appears also has turned into a little bit of a ringleader and coaxing other older children to not do what the lady who runs the class says. And so it begins. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, and I will see you next time.